Of Jim, who's standing in and experiencing what it's like to present a show this evening, and I will say he's doing a brilliant job.
Well, thank you. Anyway, if I can ask Terry, you had an unusual entry. Not the course that would be recommended for to get off the factory floor and onto sales. You had a slight accident, hadn't you?
Yeah, I did, yeah. I was doing something again that I shouldn't be doing. I decided to do a bit of woodwork at home and make a kind of a press. So I was using what was known as a saw, a circular saw in the factory, cutting a piece of wood. But there was a knot in the piece of wood, so you pushed it fairly hard, except for it went right through the saw and through my two fingers. And I picked up my index finger and ran across the road to Jervis Street Hospital. Mm. So that was my introduction to woodwork. I've never cut anything after that.
And you went as a sales rep, you said, with a particular company,
yeah.
With your finger in the bandage.
That's right, yeah.
Because you weren't working at the time.
I was off, yeah, and I heard they were doing interviews for reps. So, as I said earlier on, I went and I got the interview and got the job. But probably I was the only.
Tell us why you got that job. It wasn't really a sales rep, you were.
Well, I didn't realise after. Well, he's dead and gone, so it wouldn't matter. But he had lost his driving licence and he needed someone to drive him around. So rather than say he was looking for a driver, he decided he'd look for a sales rep. And he gave me a company car, which was terrific. But I spent the first couple of months I spent really driving him around to companies. But he soon was happy enough to stay in the office and let me go out.
Okay. But during all this, Terry, with all the traumas you were having and you were trying to get your family life together, you decided to pursue an officer's course then in the Navy.
Well, that became automatic as you went up the ranks, a seaman, leading seaman, petty officer, chief petty officer. If you were a chief petty officer or a petty officer, an NCO, they had a selection every so often when a vacancy became from an officer. And I was very fortunate to be one of the lads in Dublin who was chosen to do an officer's course. And I qualified as an officer and got commissioned.
Right, and then getting back to your business, you decided to open in Belfast.
Yeah.
And that was at, I think, the height of the troubles,
it was.
Wasn't it?
What actually happened was that there was an agency I took on for a printing machine. And they had a service engineer working for them in Belfast who covered the whole of Ireland. And part of the deal was that I took him on as my engineer. So for about the first year or so, he was working out of Dublin, out of Belfast for me. And then he suggested to me, would I not consider opening in Belfast? And before I knew it, yes, I ended up in Belfast, opening a branch right in the heart of the Loyalist area of the Bearsbridge Road. And I would have to say, Jim, as we said earlier, all the best accounts that I had in Belfast were staunch Loyalists.
But surely you must have, been worried at that time. You know, did you realise where you were opening? Or did you think it was just the guy who you were getting involved with was just going picking a choice of location? When you realised the location, what was your reaction?
Well, the night that we opened our business, there was drums and all going on behind me. It was July the 12th, and right outside our main door was all the orange men getting ready to do all the parade and all the whole lot of it. It was only then I realised that I was right in the heart of the Loyalist area. Now, that may sounds stupid, but he chose where we were. It never occurred to me. I didn't realise that my staff in Belfast were all staunch Loyalists as well. I didn't have any. I had no nationalists working for me. They were all staunch Loyalists, and he was very big up in the Masonic Lodge and everything because he wanted to see was I interested in joining the Masons, you know.
And of course, that was, you know, seen as very adventurous for a Dublin company to be opening up in a Loyalist area in Belfast. Mm-hmm. And you persuaded, I believe, the Lord Mayor of Dublin to visit your opening.
That's
and
right, yeah.
Join with the Belfast Lord Mayor, which I think was the first time that the yes. two Lord Mayors, certainly over the troubled period, had come together.
Yeah, the Lord Mayor in Dublin at the time was Fergus O'Brien, and I was very, very friendly with Fergus, and I asked him would he be interested in coming to the grand opening of my branch in Belfast, because we were having a dinner in the I think it was the Park Avenue Hotel, and he suggested to me that would I be interested in, would I not invite the Lord Mayor of Belfast, who actually was, as you know, is the he was a loyalist Lord Mayor. So I wrote to John Carsons, and he was quite happy to come along. So I was very pleased that at our dinner, on my right hand side I had the Lord Mayor of Belfast, John Carsons, and on my left hand side I had the Lord Mayor of Dublin, Fergus O'Brien. Fergus O'Brien then invited John Carsons and his people to come down and visit Dublin, and they did a walk around in Dublin. And then they in turn invited Fergus O'Brien as the Lord Mayor back to Belfast. And then they ended up having a digger match with Ian Paisley. And Ian Paisley got punched and ended up on his back across an armchair in the Europa Hotel. Sorry about that. I shouldn't have caused all that trouble.
Of course, the Europa Hotel, Terry, has seen a lot of activity, especially during the Troubles.
Mm-hmm.
Not only Mr. Paisley falling on his back, but other troubles as well. Is it true that it was the most bombed hotel in the United Kingdom?
It was. There was huge security barricades there. I used to always stay in the Europa Hotel, and it was like going through a prison. There was a huge security. I don't even know why they particularly picked the Europa Hotel, or any hotel for that matter, because a hotel is there for everybody, nationalists and loyalists.
Terry, there was just something, just quickly, Jim. When you were appointed skipper of the naval sailing, when you were training as skipper, you were appointed skipper of the training vessel. Mm-hmm. Where did you go, and how did you decide your course? If there was sea and tide, how did you? What kind of training did you do? I was just interested.
Well, yeah, I mean, basically, I was allowed to choose where I went and what time we went, a whole lot of it. So normally, we would go to Dunleary on a Thursday night. The army would bring our rations out for the weekend, and we'd head off usually up to the Isle of Man or over to Holyhead. On the way, we'd sail right through the night. So. If we had 12 lads on board, we divide them into what was known as three watches, 4 on, 8 off, 4 hours on, 4 hours off, so on and so forth. And during the course, they'd have to learn how to chain sail if the wind got up. They would learn about the tides, how to navigate.
Yes.
Because once you got out of sight of land, you had to know where you were. So you had your charts, and the lads were taught how to navigate and how to plot courses and how to take readings. So like the headphones you have on, we would have instruments to be able to pick up a signal from lighthouses and know where we were going. And we had to be very careful, and we had to judge wind and tide. So the lads did learn.
And did you just use the Morse code as well?
No, we were more sophisticated, because Morse was now gone. So you had radio telephony, so you could. But we had to keep in constant communication with the naval base. Okay. We had to give them our position every 4 hours, let them know where we were, And we had to watch the wind and tide and what have you.
Okay.
Tell me, Terry. I'm just going to pull the microphone over here. We're a little bit stretched for space here. With the wind. Turbines in the Irish Sea there. Is it a dangerous thing to have in the sea? Wind turbines?
No, because, I mean, modern day technology, I mean, you've radar. I mean, a ship can see a small little boat a mile away. So, I mean, there's no danger, because every ship can see exactly where they are. There's no danger whatsoever.
So I actually have never seen one out there. I've never gone out past them. I don't know if you have in your travels.
No.
I'm just wondering. I'm sure they must have flashing lights out there.
Well, when we were going south, if we were going to Portsmouth or going on down to the Scilly Isles, we'd pass the Kinsale gas rigs. But you'd smell the gas before you actually saw the rigs, but we were plotting our course. We knew exactly where that rig was, and we'd be watching for it. And you look at your watch and say, right, in about 5 minutes, just off our starboard bow now, we should see the gas rig coming up. And then the lads would say, there, skipper, there she is.
There was a film called The Bounty, and I don't want to take up the whole thing. Fletcher Christian spoke about the sexton when the it was Marlon Brando and the ship was burning and blah, 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 blah. And he was looking for this, I don't know whether it was the sextant.
Sextant, that's correct, yeah.
Was that a compass?
It was a compass, yeah. Right, it was an instrument that he could measure. He'd know from the stars and the curvature of the earth, he'd know exactly where he was. He needed a sextant to be able to find this place. And by the way, one of my pet subjects about the Bounty has been that Fletcher Christian was the bad guy. In reality, he was the bad guy. He was a snob. And it was Captain Bligh was the most malign man. He was an excellent captain. Mm-hmm. And he has the record of giving the least punishment to his crew. But his problem was he came up from the ranks. Mm. So whereas Christian was came from the Isle of Man aristocracy. So all of those films are all wrong.
Yeah,
it's Christian was the bad guy.
Trevor Hard played William Bligh, and he was rather cruel in the film.
Yes, of course he was. Yeah. And so was Charles Laughton, and so was Trevor Howard.
I'll hand you over to Jim there.
Yeah.
Right, Terry. Well, Terry, thank you. You'd retired then from the Navy in 1996, I think it was it?
On age ground, yeah. I had to go, yeah.
And you sold your business in 2003,
yeah.
And you do absolutely nothing now, isn't that right?
Well, after I sold my business, I got a job as a teacher with in Curtis College, teaching young girls up in Curtis College computers. I did that for a year. And now I'm chairman of the Printers Association. So I look after the interests of the printers, try and stop all these people from sending all the magazines over to the UK and Spain, sort of thing.
And I believe you're off to London now regarding the Navy for the weekend to join with the British Navy.
Yeah, the Royal Naval Association are having a big parade to the Cenotaph on Sunday, and I have 63 of our members from the Irish Naval Association, and we're heading off. We're going tomorrow morning, and tomorrow night we're invited to a reception in Liverpool. They're throwing a function for us tomorrow night, music and song and what have you. We're heading down then on Saturday to London. Then on Sunday, 63 of us will parade with the Royal Naval Association to the Cenotaph, and the president of our association will lay a wreath to all the deceased members and all the people who have fallen. And it's the first time that the Irish Naval Association have participated in such a parade. So I think it's another step forward in our relationships.
Well, Terry, all I can say is thank you very much indeed for coming in. Unfortunately, time has caught up with us. My thanks to Jim for taking the controls this evening. He has had the L on his back for some weeks now. I think he's ready to put the R on it.
Yes.
Restricted. no doubt he'll be back. He'll be back shortly. Well, Antoinette, that about wraps up the show for this week. I'm not too sure what's going to happen over the next 4 weeks, because I am taking a little bit of a break.
Yeah, you're going off. You're going down under, isn't that what they say?
Yes, down
and,
to Oz.
Well, I wish you a speedy journey and a safe journey to yourself and your wife. And they're celebrating with their son his 30th birthday.
Yes.
And we'll all miss you here, but I think we'll soldier on, and we'll be ready awaiting your return, maybe with a didgeridoo or a wallaby or God knows what he'll bring back.
Exactly. So until next week.
And thank you, Terry.
And thanks to Terry, thanks to Jim and Antoinette. And I'll be back in about 4 weeks, but you never know what might go out between this and then.
Indeed.
Until then, take care, folks.
That's what they call me, 'cause I'm so lonely since I lost you.